Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Tuesday, September 23rd. Coming up today, we'll hear from a rugby referee who almost collapsed during the first game of the season. And there's been a plea from health bosses for people to talk to their families about organ donation. But first, taking a look at our top story today. A Canterbury woman who spiked a man's drink with laxatives has avoided being sent to prison. Kaylee Higgins took to social media to boast that she was free within hours of leaving the court. Nicola's got the details of this story for us. She's here with me now. Nick, what do we know about the spiking?
Well, it happened at a property in Dover on May the 31st last year. Kaylee Higgins was one of a number of people there at the time. A witness later described how Higgins had asked where the victim had left his drink and was seen pouring a lot of liquid into a bottle of Coke. It was when the man drank from the bottle that panic set in because everyone realised what had happened. A lactulose bottle had also been found stashed in a cupboard. It had been opened and over half its contents were missing. It's worth noting too that Higgins hadn't met the victim before.
And without going into too many details, what sort of an effect did this have on the victim?
Well, once he'd realised what had happened, he tried to make himself sick but was unable to do so. He had a panic attack because he has a pre-existing condition. For the next day and a half, he suffered severe diarrhoea, and the court also heard he had urinary incontinence as a result.
So what happened when Kaylee faced court?
Well, initially, when she was interviewed by police, Higgins said it was a joke and that she'd spiked the victim's drink as a dare. After being charged, she pleaded guilty to an offence of administering a poison or noxious substance with intent to injure. She also has 6 convictions for 10 previous offences. The 38-year-old from Tennyson Avenue was handed a 12-month community order and must complete 25 rehab sessions. She's also been ordered to pay her victim £500 in compensation.
And then after the court proceedings were over, she took to the socials.
Yeah, that's right. The evening before the court appearance, she posted a photo of herself and told her followers she was scared at the prospect of going to prison. After the ruling, she was back online and posted, "I'm free," and then an expletive before adding, "No prison for me." She thanked all the people who'd supported her.
Thanks, Nick.
Kent Online News.
An inquest has heard the mum of a baby who died at a Kent hospital didn't feel her son was safe. 7-month-old Tommy Kneebone died from an undiagnosed heart condition at Tunbridge Wells Hospital in Pembrey in January of 2023. Mum Shanice said no one at the time was taking her concerns seriously. The inquest is ongoing. A Maidstone man has been found not guilty of carrying out a sex attack outside a leisure centre. The 28-year-old was arrested 5 days after the attack was reported to have happened near Lockmeadow last September. He pleaded guilty to weapons and drugs charges but was cleared of the sexual offences by a jury. A man's been arrested following a suspected hit and run in Tunbridge. A pedestrian was seriously injured in a collision with a black Mercedes on Quarry Hill Road earlier this month. The car left the scene before officers arrived. A man in his 70s has since been questioned and released on bail. A rural task force has recovered stolen goods worth more than £80,000 following an operation in Swale. Among the items were caravans, vehicles and cabling, with officers targeting locations in Sittingbourne, Newington and Sheppey. Several suspects remain under investigation over the thefts. 10 tonnes of illegal meat has been seized in the space of 2 weeks at the port of Dover. Figures show an increase in cases, raising concerns about the spread of disease like African swine fever or foot and mouth. Council bosses are calling for extra staff at a checking facility and tougher punishments for those trying to smuggle products into the UK.
Kent Online News.
Figures seen by the Kent Online podcast show 120 people in Kent have died while waiting for an organ transplant over the past decade. And at the end of July this year, more than 140 people were still on the list for potentially life-saving surgery. The data has been released at the start of a week, hoping to increase the number of us who are registered as a donor. Lucy's been chatting to James Broughton. He's the lead nurse for organ donation in the southeast.
I think some of the barriers are people don't think about it. I think it's the standard thing. If you look at the number of people in the UK that have a will, it's surprisingly low. I think that sort of fits the metric as well a little bit with the, not even the organ donor register, but talking about death, talking about end of life. I think that's a main thing. There is, depending on culture, they may not talk about end of life. They may talk about death, discussions on that. I think the most important thing with this is to talk with your family, go onto the organ donation site and make your decision, and then tell your family about it. And that way, if the worst happens, your family are partially prepared to know your wishes.
Do you have any advice for how to open up that conversation, whether it's, you know, for your own wishes or whether you want to talk to a relative about what they want after they've gone? Because as you said, death is a hard thing to talk about.
I'm a great fan of honesty and directness. I think, you know, it doesn't have to be hellishly serious, but you're sitting down over a meal with some, I don't know, a loved one, you're having a cup of tea, whatever it may be. And, you know, I want to talk about this. You know, I've just written my will. That's a good one, I suppose. I've just had my will done, and this is what I'd like as and when I die. I've signed on to the organ donation register, and these are my wishes. And hopefully you can support them with that. And I think just have a conversation. You know, it's the British people on the whole, I think, don't like talking about death, end of life. And it's something we need to normalize a bit more. Yeah, it's not the greatest subject to discuss, but it comes to all of us, and forewarned is forearmed, I think.
For younger people as well, and younger adults, you never know what's going to happen, do you? And being able to give that gift of life to someone else is so important.
Oh, completely, completely. And I think when you talk about younger people, I mean, I'm in a slightly unusual position, but because of where I work. But my daughter had been on the organ donor register from the age of 2. And then when she got a bit older and we had the discussion, and she said, yeah, of course, why would I not want to help people? And then when she turned 16, she went back on and re-registered herself. So you're never too young or too old to sign up. And obviously, when you're looking at teenagers as well, getting their driver's license, getting your first passport, there's an option there to tick as well. I think it's just raising awareness across the board, really. It makes a difference. It may not make a difference to you there and then, but it'll probably make a difference to your family, knowing your wishes, and it'll definitely make a difference to someone else after you've gone. One donor potentially could help 9 other people through just organ donation, and potentially dozens more through tissue donation as well after they've died. So it really is quite a gift that keeps on giving. And a lot of families take an awful lot of comfort from that, knowing that something positive has come out of something awful.
Nationally, the waiting list is the highest it's ever been. There are plans to open up more than 4,000 new GP places in Kent by transforming an old dementia centre in Sittingbourne. The NHS wants to turn the disused Frank Lloyd unit at the Sittingbourne Memorial Hospital into a GP surgery. The site's been vacant for 4 years but needs council approval before work can begin. A rugby referee from Ashford who was rushed to hospital after almost collapsing during a game has urged others not to ignore when something's wrong. Martin Hodge was taking charge of Dover's Duke of York School against King's School Rochester in their first match of the season. The 51-year-old has told Nicola he immediately didn't feel right when he started running, but did try to keep going.
I'll be honest, I blew the whistle to start and started running, and I'll be honest, straight away I realised I wasn't right. I partly put that down to it was the first game of the season, thinking to myself as I'm trying to keep up, or really wish I'd done a bit more fitness over the summer. But yeah, just thinking, I'm getting on a bit. I'll run it off in a couple of minutes. I'll be fine. And as time went on, I realised I'm really struggling here, to the point where I was thinking, how am I going to get through this game? Not thinking I wouldn't get through a game, but thinking, how am I going to get through a game? Just thinking about I knew I couldn't keep up, how I could slow down the game a little bit, but knowing myself, I absolutely wasn't right. And that was until about 5 minutes in. And about 5 minutes in, I started to realise I really, really wasn't right. This wasn't just something that was, I was going to run off. And then I think that's when I guess a little bit of pride kicked in, or I'm not really sure. Just, you've got a crowd of people, we're not talking a huge crowd, but probably a crowd of 30, 40 parents watching. You've got two teams of players, who are down there for a game of rugby. You don't want to, and you don't want to spoil the game. You don't want to, and you're thinking, well, it's quite a difficult thing to call it and make that decision and say, I can't do this. So I kept going, and I literally just before I did kind of collapse, there was a line out, which is so obviously the game stopped. I got there, and I remember standing there. I could feel my head was thumping. My vision was starting to go. My chest was tight, and I do literally remember standing there thinking, "Is this a heart attack?" And even then, I look at myself now, and it's like, but I didn't make the call even then. It was just taking deep breaths and go again. And I did that, and then the ball went across, and probably maybe a minute later, the game stopped again, another line out. And at that point, I was even worse, and I realized if I am going to black out here. Couldn't breathe, pouring with sweat, just absolutely exhausted. And yeah, so at that point then I didn't quite collapse, but I took a knee, and I did blow the whistle to stop the game before I took a knee though, even then. But so yeah, that's ultimately what happened. It's and then yeah, at that point, pitch side, Andrea, she was wonderful. But even then, it was her who took the decision and initiated getting an ambulance. I was still able to talk. I was still conscious. I was able to talk barely. And I do remember her saying, "Is do you, are you all right? Is this serious?" And I was like, "And you just don't want to admit that you're not right." And yeah, I remember her saying something along the lines, "Is this ambulance serious?" And I was sort of took a pause, and I was like, "Actually, probably yes." And so it was her who made that call. And I can even, I think a lot of us are like that. I still would have been sat there thinking I would have been okay if she hadn't made that decision and called the ambulance.
It doesn't bear thinking about, but Martin, I guess it's just such good fortune that you were where you were. I mean, because you were surrounded by so many people there, they could see you were trying to carry on, but they could see that, you weren't well at all. Had this happened if you'd gone out for a jog on your own or whatever, I mean, it doesn't bear thinking about really, does it?
No, absolutely, and that's the thing. I had actually been out the week before. I do run quite a lot. I'll go out and do 5Ks generally quite happily. It's fair to say, that week, I think maybe Tuesday last week, I had been out for a run, and again, in hindsight, and recently, I realise now I wasn't okay. My times had dropped off dramatically, but I could go and plod round a. And again, I just put it down to, oh, I need to go out and work a bit harder. I'm not fit enough. And I look back now, and obviously that was part of, the pulmonary embolisms I've had, and the lack of oxygen uptake. But yeah, I mean, I got around that. I didn't feel great doing a 5K the week before, but I did it. So yeah, absolutely that. I was very fortunate, really. I was somewhere with a crowd of people. I guess if you're going to have an event like that, then doing it with an audience is a positive thing. So,
I mean, obviously, you're incredibly fit. You keep healthy. It must have, a week since you're back home, which is fantastic. But to think it all through again, it must be quite a shock, really. And to think, if you're not feeling 100%, that you maybe do you think, oh, in hindsight, perhaps I should have, spoken to someone about this, or how does it make you feel afterwards?
no, but I mean, absolutely. That's my big takeaway from it, really. Was that I was in denial. I was in denial from the start when I knew I wasn't feeling right. I don't think going back, I'd say I should have called it after 2 minutes. I don't think at that point, well, I probably did know, but certainly 5 minutes earlier. But yeah, it was tough. It's tough to admit to that to yourself. It's tough. I think for anybody, you feel like you're letting people down. You don't want to admit that you're weak. I didn't want to look like because at the time I was just feeling, blimey, I'm so unfit. I didn't want to look like this, I don't know, unfit, unprepared referee that's turned up and looked stupid in front of everybody. But absolutely, in hindsight, it's yeah. I mean, that would be my takeaway. I guess a wiser man. Absolutely, it's something that. Different events. My pulmonary artery could have burst with the pressure is the big end. The outcome of that, is pretty obvious. It could have been a lot worse. Yeah, and I think that would be my message to anyone, really. If, listen to your body. If you know it's not right, then, don't be brave, don't be stupid, really. Because I think I've certainly learned my lesson on that.
Tests later revealed he had blood clots in his lungs, which were putting pressure on his heart.
Kent Online News.
The Planning Inspectorate has overturned Medway Council's decision to block 26 flats in Strood. Local bosses said the plans for three blocks of flats on a former quarry in Broomhill Road would be overdevelopment and out of character with the area. Inspectors said the added housing would benefit the area in the long term. There are plans to build 150 homes on the site of a former special school in Margate. The Royal School for Deaf Children has been partly demolished after its closure in 2015. Developers say the scheme will include a community facility and green space, and it will have a positive impact on the community. Part of a golf course in Ramsgate that has planning permission for a luxury holiday village has gone on the market for £600,000. As many as 20 lodges could be built on the land at Stoneless Golf Course. Extra holes will be added to make up for the space lost to the new buildings. Now, a former hairdresser has been telling the Kent Online podcast why she's decided to turn her salon into a medical clinic. Shelley Hallen ran Canvas in West Street for 26 years. She's been talking to reporter Joe Crossley.
I knew I had to make a change because the hairdressing situation's completely different to what it was when I started years ago. 26 years I've had the salon, and I had some really good friends there and lovely work colleagues, and have had, that's all I know is hairdressing. But at the end of the day, it's a business. And I wasn't making the money that I should have been making for having the responsibility. So that's when I decided to go into the next best thing, medical, because I know that's what's on the horizon for the future, really. The same as dentists, they used to be NHS and now they're private, so.
You were talking about the chairs as well.
Yeah.
But you just weren't seeing the amount of new people come into the industry.
No. So young people now don't seem to want to go into hairdressing. I've got a friend who works in a college down in Bournemouth, and she's a teacher there. And where before there was like 20 teachers there, now there's three teachers left because there's not a lot of people going into hairdressing. So, which is a shock. It's more barbering, really. So there's just, yeah. The youngsters don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. Do you know if there's a particular reason for that?
I think it's just a change in mentality, really. They probably think hairdressing's, not much money in it. So a lot of men are going into the barbering, as I said. But the girls are doing hair extensions and eyelashes and nails. They're going down the beauty route more than hairdressing.
Shelley's running the new business alongside nurse Lorraine Stapley, who was a former client. They've been telling Joe exactly how it came about.
I was sort of doing Lorraine's hair one day and just said, have you ever thought about opening a medical clinic? As you do. I do have mad ideas sometimes. And she said, well, the business side of it, I couldn't do, I've not got the premises, because there's a lot of things that go into it. It's not just medical. It's the situation with the building, doing it all up, everything that goes with it. And because I've been here for 26 years with the building, I sort of know that side of it. That's the part I can contribute. So, and Lorraine done all the hard work, really.
And just talk to me about the services you're going to offer, Lorraine.
Well, we're going to offer a very vast range of services within the clinic. All of our nurses and healthcare assistants are going to be there. They're all registered with the NMC or, whoever they need to be registered with. So everyone is fully trained to what they need to be doing. So we'll be doing things like we can do weight loss jabs, we can do blood testing, we can do travel, contraceptive coils and implants, malaria treatment, Botox and fillers, ear irrigation, I'm trying to think what else, phlebotomy, Oh, you name it, we can do it.
Kent Online News.
An inclusive music college in Kent, which caters for children with special educational needs, is moving into a new home. Super Jam will be taking over the old NatWest building in Swanley Town Centre from the start of next year. They hold courses for young people and help them engage in education through a specialist music curriculum. David Court is the CEO. He's been speaking to reporter Charlotte Phillips.
In all of our colleges, we've got four colleges now.
Yes.
And we've just launched a charity this year as well. And I can tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Afterwards. But in all of the colleges, we have a state-of-the-art recording studio. We have podcasting and radio studios, which do really well. They're really popular. And of course, they help break down any barriers that students might feel because it gets everyone talking in podcasts. We have sensory rooms. We have jam rooms as well, because a lot of our students also, if they feel dysregulated, then they can go and just take 5 minutes out and have a jam with a tutor or a learning support practitioner and go and just calm down a bit, you know, and just play something. And you'll often find that that will help release, you know, any sort of built up tension that they may have.
So that's
you know, in certain colleges we have things like the photography suite in Brighton and stuff like that as well.
Amazing.
Our recording studio, podcast studio, sensory rooms, jam rooms, and we try and make every classroom not feel like mainstream. It's got more of a sort of recording a record label vibe. So in every classroom we try and put sofas in there, and we try and have sort of chill out spaces, so it seems to work quite well.
Amazing.
We've also got the music shelf, where we get artists who come in, professionally signed artists come in, and that gives the students a chance to do sheltered work experience. So they get a chance to do artist liaison, they get a chance to photograph the artists, and then the artists will play a set, and that's all recorded by our students, edited by our students. And so it just gives them that sort of, it builds their confidence in sheltered work experience before they go out to the festivals, because we partner up with a lot of festivals like the Great Escape down in Brighton, where we offer work experience, the Black Deer Festival, which is in Kent, which has been so supportive, and our students run their own stage there.
Oh, amazing.
So that gives them incredible work experience when and they sort of get to actually experience real life work scenarios.
A special needs school in Sittingbourne, which was rated outstanding just over a year ago, has now been told it requires improvement by Ofsted. Inspectors visited Meadowfield School in June and have now published their report. It raises concerns about leadership and sixth form provision, but early years and personal development were found to be good. A student who sat her GCSEs at a now closed special needs school in Ashford has received her results after weeks of delays. 16-year-old Leah Martin attended Cornfield School until it closed on July 2nd, but she wasn't notified of her grades at the end of August with everyone else. Following a story in Kent Online highlighting how much the delay was impacting her future studies, she's now been given her results and they are what she was expecting. Education charity AQA says it's a matter of regret that she didn't get her grades last month, but they're pleased it's all been sorted. And engineers with Southern Water have found a discarded dumbbell was the cause of a blocked sewer in Folkestone. Electronic sensors picked up the build-up of wastewater in Shalcroft Road. The dumbbell had caused a fatberg to develop. You can see pictures at Kent Online.
Kent Online Sports.
Taking a quick look at football now, and Kent's Alessia Russo has missed out on a prize at the Ballon d'Or Awards. The England striker came third in the women's category for best player, which was won for a third year in a row by Spanish midfielder Aitana Bonmatí. Elsewhere, Lioness boss Serena Wiegman was named best manager, and Hannah Hampton won the award for best goalkeeper following victory at the Euros. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. To find out more, head to www.kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.